We'll start with the Sora Sheet because we finished the Gemara last time. And we were in the middle of the Sora Sheet. We'll start on the first page towards the bottom. We'll recap a little bit of what we ended with last time. If you remember, we talked about the source of Yichud last week. We were, I'd say, profoundly dissatisfied with the source of Yichud. It was a somewhat obscure drash, which leads, as we saw last time, the Rambam to think that the whole thing is really only Midurabanan, or Midivrei Kabbalah, really. Something that is very, very ancient, but not something that was directly from the Torah, according to the Rambam. It goes back at least as far as David HaMelech, because by David HaMelech's time, they already were making a gzeira about a pnuya, about a single girl, which is not included in the original Yichud problem. But Rashi believes that it's completely daraita, you know, from beginning to end. And we saw that the Shulchan Aruch is kind of vague. Shulchan Aruch just basically quotes the Rambam, but nothing there is convincing, because while he says makin makat mardut, which usually means the Rabbanan, Rashi actually also said that. Rashi also said you give makos mardus and not regular malkos. And the Gra picks up on it and he says, oh, this is like the Rambam, because he says makos mardus, which means that it's only the Rabbanan. And we pointed out that Rashi says it also. So the Gra also, as Mike pointed out, the Gra ended by saying, or maybe it's an Isser Asay. And if it's an Isser Asay, meaning it's some kind of, I think the way that Mike put it last week was, if you find yourself in a room alone with a woman, you're obligated to leave. Something like that. Yeah. In which case, there's not going to be any Malkot, Midoraita. So there's only going to be Malkot, Midorabanan. All right?
My friends told me,
what if you stay?
My friend told me in the morning, right. You have, when I leave, you have to leave. You can't be in that house with my wife alone.
That's right. Well, that's not right, but I mean, kind of right. Depends where he's going, right?
No, he was going to work, or he's going to Shiva's
house. Okay. So that's
Mr. Bebza Rochovor.
That's what we're going to talk about a little bit tonight. How's it going? So we pointed all of that out, and then we pointed out exactly what David's talking about—the concept of Bala Ba'ir. So the Gemara already addressed and said that as long as the husband is in town, and we haven't defined what in town is yet, as long as the husband is in town, there's no yichud, because Bala Ba'ir. And then we started talking about, well, why is that? So Shulman, Baruch Shulman, that I brought you this source over here, he breaks it down as a machloket between Rashi and the Rambam, second machloket of Rashi and the Rambam that we've seen. Rashi says, al pi pashtos, that the reason why it's not a problem of yichud is because as long as the husband's in town, the woman is always going to be concerned that at any given moment, he could walk in. And therefore, she's not going to do anything because she's worried that she's going to be caught. Just simple. The Rambam, and I know last time you guys weren't so sure that this is, you know, this is correct in the Rambam, but this is definitely how people understand the Rambam. The Rambam says it a little bit differently. He says that when the husband is in town, there's no problem because emat ba'ala aleha, because the fear of her husband is upon her. And all the Mefarshei Rambam say that Rambam doesn't mean the same thing Rashi means. Rashi means he's worried that he's going to walk in. Rambam, according to everybody, says he means that he's on her mind. In other words, she's got in the back or in the front of her mind, he's there. And so she's not going to do anything.
Then what difference does it make if he's in town or not?
Good question. I guess you could say the proximity or something like that. Like, as long as he's in town, she's kind of on his mind. And if he leaves, he's like out of the country, then he's not. It's a good question. But it's something along those lines. Like you know, you can imagine that when, you know, the wife goes away to a different country, right? So you feel different when you're walking around in the house than when you're walking around on a stam Sunday afternoon and she's out at the store, she's out at work. And it's not just because you know she's going to come home, but you feel her close. So the same thing, when a wife is alone in the house, as long as the husband is in town, she feels kind of like he's almost there. That's generally the idea. What are the nafkaminas for that?
If you know he's not going to walk in.
Oh, what happens if you know for a fact he's not coming? So, for example,
you just spoke to him and he's on the other side of town. Maybe he's in the prison now.
Maybe he's in jail. What if he's in jail?
Maybe he forgot his key.
What if he's got an important appointment? He's got a doctor's appointment right now.
Never happened.
Or what happens if he's in surgery?
City of New York, on a meeting.
Yeah, or what if he's really stuck? He's in surgery. He's not going anywhere. You know,
with
he's
in
not
Miami,
going
and she's
But you're in the hospital, and he's in surgery.
Exactly.
Exactly. He's still around. He's still around. So he's on your mind. So you're not going to do anything. Whereas if hold like Rashi, nothing's stopping her. So.
And therefore,
there's going to be a problem of yichud if she has yichud with anybody.
So, in which case, not just it's not enough for him to be in town. He has to be in town and potentially walking in and out.
Exactly.
You know, every day he goes to work and he's never in Kenya, has come back in the middle of that.
Exactly.
He could.
So. Yes, and maybe the flip side. Can you come up with a case where you'd be machmir the other way, where Rashi would maybe make on the Rambam would be machmir? Well, kind of, let's say, you know, if ba'ir means literally, you know, ba'ir, like he has to be proximally close. So maybe there's a situation where the husband is far away, but on the other hand, he could come back at any moment, somehow. You know, with modern transportation, he could come back at any moment, and you have no idea when.
Does that count?
Good question.
Or one of those remote cameras.
No, does it call?
It's a good question. Does that create Emas Bala? But it might create Rashi as well. It might help you with Rashi as well.
Rabbi, a question to ask. My niece lives in America. She's got a boyfriend who lives there. They talk on the telephone. They talk on Skype. Skype video. Does that count?
Does that count for what? That as though she's there?
Yeah.
So the fact is that Skype, you have to pick up the phone in order for it to work. So
you can have a CCTV camera.
The modern security systems we guys can steal the phone from anywhere in the world.
So I think that they would probably be make up for both of them. I think that's good enough for both of them. Because then you're not really alone. Anybody can see what you're doing. Let's take a look at what Ravosha says.
That's not really enough community the other way. What? Enough community the other way would be where... I don't know, maybe she's not scared of her husband. He's around, but she's not scared of him.
Not scared because...
Why? Why would she not be scared?
That's
right. I'm trying to think about that. I'm not coming the other way around.
That's a great point, because actually, the Gemara has that situation. Remember the Gemara? This the case that we saw in the Gemara was Rav Yosef invited over his brother. No, his who was it? It was his
best friend.
His best friend who had a relationship with his wife, and he said, "You can't stay in the house." And they said, "But it's Bala Ba'ir," and the answer was over there because Libo Gaspa. The answer over there was that Bala Ba'ir doesn't help when there's a special relationship between the man and the wife. If there's if it's like a brother-in-law or something like that, then Bala Ba'ir doesn't help. But it's a great point that Rav Yosef was blind and yet Bala Ba'ir helped. So one could say that this would be a raya for the Rambam because for Rashi, you know, even if he would come back in, he wouldn't know what was going on. So one could say that. It's a good point.
Does this remind me what the original drush was that was based on? I'm trying to remember.
For Yichud in general?
With familiarity.
So the source for Yichud in general, we can't go through the whole thing, but the source for Yichud in general was there was a pasuk that says that with regard to a mesis, to being enticed by somebody for avodah zarah, it says, don't be enticed by your brother from your father. The implication being your brother from your mother. Right. So your brother from your mother. The implication being almost as if, what, the brother from your father you don't have to worry about? And so the Gemara says, yes, that's right, because your brother from your father, you don't spend any time with him, so you don't trust him anyways. Right. You don't trust him anyways, your brother from your father, you don't spend any time with him because he's not in the house with you. And why wouldn't he be in the house with you? Must not be. He must be that he's not in the house with you because you can't be in the house with him because his mother can't live with you because then there would be a yichud problem when everybody else leaves. That was it. Was a very far fetched drasha. Everybody agrees.
The point we said it was a very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Rationale.
To the point where some of the mafarshim said, "I've been breaking my head over this for 30 years trying to figure out what's going on over here," and so the Rambam seems to believe that it's not even me really midoraita. It's really more of an asmachta or a remez. But Rashi believes it's a real daraita din. Now let's take a look at Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe, Ugas Moshe, this is the second source on the second side of the page.
When did he live?
Rav Moshe Feinstein? 1920s to 19, I think he died in 1980s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What? I guess he was before the 1920s. Yeah. I mean, he was in Russia.
He was writing, I think.
Before. Yeah, he was in Russia. When he came to New York, it was probably in the 1940s, 1950s. I don't know. Umitam zeh b'medina zu New York, in New York, kishabalu ba'ir, aval yaduahu la, shahalach l'kce ha'ir, shemi ha'bayit, adam akom shahalach l'sham hu erech sha'a. Let's say you live in New York, and the husband went out to work, and you know this is probably, I don't know what year it was. Actually, it's relatively late, Evan Hezer, Chelik Dalet. But let's say it still took an hour, you know, taking the subway or whatever, to get back home. V'chazarahu sha'av, tzarich lishhot sha'av. In other words, he left, so it's going to be 2 hours. Tzarich lishhot sha'am erach sha'av, so it's 3 hours. He's got 3 hours before he's home. Asura b'yichud. If you're talking about a situation where nobody else is going to show up, for instance, at night, or even during the day when people don't come by the house. In other words, Rav Moshe just canceled Bala Be'ir in New York when your husband goes to work.
Usually, how he
spells
New York.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have Niu. It's usually Nun Yud Vav. It's usually Nun Yud Vav for some reason. New York. But he does.
That's
New York.
The English way of New York.
What do you mean? Oh, New York. Oh, I see. No, well, we say new. You guys say new.
We say new.
New.
We say new.
New.
Do you want the dates, by the way?
What? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
1895. Right?
Oh, wow.
Then moved in 1936 and died in 86, which made him 91.
Okay. You know that they had an obituary in the New York Times. You know what it said in the New York Times? You could, or maybe you can confirm this because I don't think I ever have, but it supposedly says he was a well-known rabbi, a very well-groomed well-known rabbi. That's what they said about him. Well-groomed, meaning he dressed well, and his beard was kept, and his hat was not askew, and he was I think that was one of the things about him, I guess. He was a very dignified, he was very short, he was a very dignified individual.
10 minutes before Shabbat, people would come in.
Yeah.
Or like
New York, Manhattan. Yeah, his sons are still there. His sons are very big rabbis in Manhattan. He started a yeshiva. It's not like a big one. It wasn't when he was well. The truth is, Rav Schachter always points out that we all know Rav Moshe, what did he write? He wrote the Igros Moshe, right? But he was more proud of his Sefer on his Sefarim on Shas that he wrote, which were called. Exactly. So they are called the Dibros Moshe. You can get them. But he was much more proud of them. And he was kind of disappointed that his Tshuva Svarim were much more popular than his... Like, those he wrote not for fun, but like they were like... He was writing the Tshuvas anyways, and then they collected them. But his Kedushin, he had worked much harder on. And he was always kind of like... What happened there that that people don't use this farm? I've tried to use Dibros Moshe. It's not easy to use.
The Igros Moshe is much more practical.
It's true. But the Tshuvas are not that easy to read either. They're not the easiest Tshuvas on the planet. When I was younger, it always felt like I was walking in the middle of a movie every time I read his Tshuva. No, really. Like, there are parts that are left out. The conclusion is not where it belongs. And he kind of goes off on tangents. If you open up a Rav Avadya Tshuva, you know where you are at all times. Like, he keeps you...
Referenced.
He keeps you grounded. Rav Moshe doesn't do that. Everything they quote from Rav Moshe is like in the middle of a tshuva somewhere.
I heard Rav Schachter last night on Facebook.
Good.
From the Park East to where Health God comes. Oh. Giving his speech before Health God started.
It's probably a different Rav Schachter. Okay, so he says it's going to be a problem in New York. And that's talking about a person who goes for a meeting for an hour. But what about people who work 9 to 5? But if he's got flex hours, he can come home anytime, then there's no Isur Yichud. So this is very, very important. But what did Rav Moshe just say? Rav Moshe just said basically that for most women who stay at home and whose husbands go to normal jobs, they cannot have men over to their house alone.
He introduces this thing if anyone else can come by.
Yes. So that during the day,
I mean,
we haven't yet talked about Petach HaTua.
Yeah.
Right? Which has nothing to do with Bala Be'er.
Rashi,
no, the Gemara does. The Gemara talks about it. But the Gemara talks about it, but it has nothing to do with Bala Bayir. That's a general cool, a general heter.
But that seems to be that even if Bala ain't no Bayir, he's not around, but people can come by.
Yes.
There is no Ichud.
Yes, that's correct.
What happens if a Technai comes to fix something else? Is he allowed to come in?
No, that's what Moshe is saying. Moshe is saying that as long as the guy's at work or he's gone for an extended period of time and she knows that, she's not allowed to have a man alone in the house, period. Take a look at
But what's the issue? The issue is because...
Yichud.
No, but I'm saying, is it because the city's so big? Or is it
because he's not going to come back. He's not going to come back. There's no way he'll come back in the middle. It's impossible.
So even in a small city, the same thing could be true. It doesn't use the size of New York.
It has to... It's not, what do you mean? Why would it be true in a small city? If it was a small city and he had no right to leave his job, meaning like...
Exactly.
He's going to get fired if he leaves.
Exactly.
Seder. Yeah.
Then the same thing would apply.
Yeah.
Sort of just because it's a big
city. No, he created a situation where, you know, he has to go, he's going to be there for an hour, it takes an hour to get there, it takes an hour to get back.
That's probably the question he was asked. That's why he's asking that specific question.
Yeah. But take a look at the Chazon Ish. So this is from a letter from the Chazon Ish. Hadas nota, the kol she'afshar lachush la'nechnasim b'chol sha'a ein zeh makom seiser. If you are at all concerned about people coming in at any given time, it's not a secluded place. That means that petach patuach, like an open, you know, the open door, implies even if nobody actually comes in, and you're not even expecting anybody to come in. Because in general, a person is nervous. Even if he knows that people don't generally come in, he's still nervous. This is the Chiddush. Gam kein b'shaot she'ein lachush b'tava she'yavo mikol makom emas bala ala. V'hilkach b'tziruf shnehem she'yesh lachush le'nichnas u'bala b'ir yesh lahakel. The Chazon Ish is not talking to Rav Moshe, but basically what he says is that even if, as long as the husband is in town, so to speak, and there's a chance that anybody could come in, you can be makom. What are they arguing about?
What's the connection between the two, though? What's the difference? Worried people are going to come in? What's the difference if your husband is in town?
Well, he's saying you're not really worried that people are going to come in. Right. You just, the door is open. It's possible for people to come in. Assuming the door is not locked, people could come in. People are walking by in the street. You're not expecting.
But then so
look, the bottom line is, if I keep the door of my, look, let's be honest. If I keep the door of my apartment open.
More true today than I think it was.
If I keep the door of my apartment open, nobody's walking through the door of my apartment.
No, but sometimes people knock on the door and say,
that's a great
point. The door, you left the door open, you know.
No, what's happened? I don't keep the door open. He didn't keep the door open. The door is closed.
What?
No, if you leave the door open, there is a chance that somebody might put their head around the door and say, you've left the door open, is everything.
No, if you leave the door open, then I think most people would be making anyways. But what happens if you close the door?
Sorry, what does Petzah Petoch mean then?
It just so that's we'll get to that. That's my focus, whether it means open or unlocked. Let's assume now that it even means just unlocked. Let's assume. Let's say we're going to see that in the Pesachim Tshuva. That's a machlokas. But let's say it even means unlocked. Either way, it doesn't sound like the Chazon Ish requires it to be open because he just says.
We question the Chazon Ish is saying that closed, unlocked door and by the ear.
Even if you don't expect him to come home, is enough to be makel. Right. So what's the machlokes between
Moshe
and
Chazon Ish?
What?
He doesn't define how big the ear is in his case.
He doesn't. No, but he said no. He does. Neither one does. The size of the ear. Let's leave aside for a second. Whatever it's called, bala ba'ir, whatever the ear is, that's what we're talking about.
Why are we wanting to be makel?
What do you mean? Why do we want him to be makel? Oh, why are we wanting to be makel? I don't know whether we're wanting to be Mako or we're not wanting to be Mako, but
we trust the wife.
What is the essence of what we're worried about in your book?
That they're going to engage in inappropriate activity.
Mm-hmm. So if the workman's coming over?
Yeah.
It would seem preferable that he lock the door so that Kanovim don't come in while he does the work for 10 minutes, okay, and leaves, rather than the fact that he can sit and have tea with your wife the entire day, building familiarity with an open door, until after 8 hours someone says, you know, why don't we lock the door?
Wait, I didn't understand.
It just feels like if we leave the
You're
door open,
a different solution.
If you leave the door open, the guy can come and visit every day for a month, builds a relationship.
But everybody could come in. Anybody could come
but
in.
But no one does. But he can sit with your wife and have tea. No, nothing happens.
She can lock the door. No. That's why he's in there. Look, she can lock the door so that he doesn't come in.
No. I'm saying the opposite. It just seems that there's no concern how long the person, how regular the person.
You want some other rules?
Okay.
It just seems like the door open or the door locked. So a wife can have a visitor every day. The relationship, it seems like we should be more worried about the relationship that builds. The fact that the door's locked or unlocked, it just seems like there's a dangerous path to saying the guy visits every day. For
look,
a
the bottom line is that if there is a special relationship, if there's a special relationship, then he can't be there anyways.
These things are actually, you can find a reason. Maybe just do it if you need to do it.
I think it's the
other way around.
No, it's not just that. It's not just that. The yichud concept, as in general, is one of sniut. Now we're trying to find the outer contours of it, not the.
It doesn't seem to solve it. I'm saying
you just two very different solutions.
I know. I think you're envisioning. But really, I think you're envisioning a different problem. I don't think that's the problem.
They shouldn't be alone together because that's what we're concerned about, where it could lead to. It just doesn't seem like the locked door is.
It doesn't necessarily.
No, because you can't develop a relationship if you're afraid that any second someone could walk in. What do you mean? And what happens if she talks on the phone for him for hours and hours and hours, or that he's not around? There's no ichud.
That could be a separate issue, but it's not going to be a formal objective issue.
This is assuming that any woman's going to be, unfaithful or whatever else. Maybe it's just so that there's not any marriage. Maybe it's just so that there's not.
So we talked a little bit last week, or 2 weeks ago rather, about what the problem of ichud actually is. Pashtus is what I said before, that we're concerned that they're going to engage in inappropriate activity. But we did float the idea that it itself is inappropriate.
Right.
Now, we've talked about this before, that you know the concept of, let's say, kissing and hugging a woman, is what's the problem there? So on the face of it, I might have, you know, there are two options available to me. One is to say that we're worried that it's going to lead to eventually actual bia, right? And that's reasonable. But it's just as reasonable to say, no, it itself is inappropriate. The kissing and hugging. So the same thing with yichud. It doesn't feel natural in the 21st century to say this because we don't see this as something inappropriate. But it could be that it is inappropriate to begin with, right? And maybe in certain circumstances it's not inappropriate because the husband could walk in at any time. So you don't. It's not like it's not sketchy, right? Either it's a problem, it's a gather, or it's just a matter of sketchiness. But either way, really, I hear what you're saying that there's a separate problem, but it's not what we're dealing with. That's a separate issue. That's going to be some. That's the point at which the husband says, "I don't want you to be alone with this man," and then she's in a bigger, in hotter way.
I think my point is, it seemed to make more sense if the gator was how much time she spends rather than.
That's one of the gedarim. That is, we're going to get there as well. That is one of the gedarim. How long is yichud? How long is the time period until it's considered?
Between the Chazon Ish and Rav Moshe.
Yeah, it is.
One lived in New York. Exactly.
Yeah.
So
one of the neighbors
where husbands came home every day, 2 to 4,
but he's describing a situation where it's not happening. Afilu b'shalot she'en lachush b'teva she'avo, even though you know he's not going to come home. Emad ba'al ala. I'll tell you what I think. It's pashut that they're the difference. It's instinctual for somebody like me to try to line these things up. But it seems to jump out that this is the Machlokas Rashi and Rambam. Rav Moshe is merely concerned with whether or not the husband's going to come home. That's the whole issue. Is the husband going to come home or not? If he's not going to come home, then there's a yichud problem. If he is, then there's no yichud problem. Whereas the Chazon Ish says, no, it doesn't even matter whether the husband comes home. It's enough that he's in the city and he's on her mind, even if he doesn't come home. And by the way, he extends this concept to the Pesach Pasuach. He says, even if you don't expect anybody to come in,
so what,
the fact that they're out there.
But if he's following Rambam, what does he need the pita? What does he need the extra bit for? The Rambam says,
maybe he's not comfortable relying merely on the Rambam. So he wants to use it as a sniff, lahakel maybe. I hear, maybe. But it seems to be that he's relying on the Rambam to say that it's not really about him actually coming in. It's a psychological state of mind where the wife is aware of her husband in a way, even if he's not actually there and he's not going to come in.
It could, I mean, beyond Bnei Brak and York, it could be a cultural conceptualization as well, in terms of how...
It could be. But the thing is, Rav Moshe was, once talked to Rav Shachter, is also occasionally naive about these things as well. So he, for him to be Machmir up here is striking, because he sometimes tends to actually give people more credit than you might normally do so. And here he doesn't, so... And that's aside from the fact that generally usually have a vision of the Chazon Ish as being very machmir, and here he's not. Whether that vision is correct or not is up for debate.
It's all about can the husband really come back, and he's saying, you know, in practical modern situation, he can't come back. So it's not a question of, you know, naivety or beliefs about things. The, you know, this is the reality today.
Right.
So as you say, if it's dependent on, you know, Rashi or the Rambam, if you hold by Rashi, then that's it.
Right.
That's all that matters.
Right. Okay. So take a look at the Pesachei Tshuva. This is Pesachei Tshuva is in the Shulchan Aruch. It's a collection of tshuvas from around that time, which is probably 18th century.
From which country?
I don't know which country the Pesachei Tshuva is from. Daniel can answer. It doesn't really matter because he's not quoting. It doesn't really matter because he doesn't quote himself. He quotes other people. But I'm going by the fact that he often quotes the Chassam Sofer and people like that, so it's probably the 1900s. Okay, 1800s, I meant. So there are a few pieces here that I wanted to extract from. We'll try to find them. The first one is the Sheimas Bala Aleha. He's quoting the Shulchan Aruch here. He says, Ein b'sefer binas Adam, shekas of denirli de'davka bebeita. Ein b'mishum yichud. Okay, how does Bala Be'er work? Right, we understand that if the wife is home and then the cleaner is going to come over, so it's okay because the husband can come home at any time, right? But what happens if the wife is in her office alone with a coworker, but her office happens to be 2 minutes from her house, or well, let's say a half hour from her house, and her husband is, guess what, in town? So is that Bala Be'er?
I thought so.
Why yes?
He's not likely to walk into the office. He's likely to go home.
Good. So, ein ba mishum yichud, aval im olechet labayit acher, afa bishabala beir yesh ba mishum yichud. So that's exactly what the Bias Adam says. He says, it only works, Bala Beir only works when she's home. But if she's not home, it doesn't work. De bazeh, lo shayach de mistafi mi Bala, because she's not going to be afraid that he's going to catch her. Hashtati keven de einu yodea heichan hi. Vaf bi yodea she yodea, so he says, and that's, by the way, since the husband doesn't know where she is, and where, what happens if he does know where she is, and she knows that he knows where she is? He gave her permission, or he's aware of where she's going. We still have to worry about Ichud. Because he gave her permission to be there, which means he's not going to check up on her. And of course, if basically she say, he says to her, you can go have this private meeting with that man, he's for sure not going to show up. Because there's no emas bala.
That's the reverse of your concern.
What if he doesn't know where she is? That's even
so
much worse. He doesn't know where she is.
That's much worse. No, of course, it's all bad. He's saying it's all bad. He's saying even if he knows where he is, even if he knows where she is, it's a problem. Of course, if he doesn't know where she is, it's definitely a problem. But what's he focused on? What's he focused on, though? If you had to pick, I mean, here he's clearly taking a side in the Rashi Rambam debate.
If he could have walked in on it.
Exactly, because the Rambam might have said,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter whether or not he's going to walk in, and it doesn't matter if he knows where she is. Because as long as he's in the city and she's aware of him, then it should be okay. She could even go somewhere else. Bala Be'er applies. By the way, it seems strange. He knows where she is. Let's say in the case where he knows where she is, and even he gave her permission, whatever it is. How is that different from when she's home? Is the difference just because we expect him to come home, but you don't expect him to go to where she is?
No.
Is that the whole difference?
I think it's a psychological thing. She's in her home, she's used to being with him, and she's used to being around. His presence is felt, and if it's some...
No, I'm saying according to Rashi, let's say. I'm saying according to Rashi, where she's supposed to be concerned. I'm saying even according to Pesachei Tshuva, the Bina Sada. Like Rashi, where she's concerned that he's going to come into the house. So how is that different than when, let's say, she's at work?
No, it shouldn't be. She knows
where she is. No, she knows where she is.
Planned,
come.
Not planned.
So in other words, it's just statistical? There's no way he's coming to her.
You don't know when he's going to come home, but he's not going to suddenly appear in her office or at her meeting.
Unless he does that.
So what happens to a
priest?
What if he does that?
What happens to a rabbi?
Yeah, it's a big issue. Where she's like the last one in the office.
Well, the only one in the office.
Big question. Well, she's the only one in the office. It's okay.
Come to visit you at the office.
It's only a problem when someone else comes in. It's a big problem. Yeah, it's a big problem.
She has to visit people at work. She's a doctor who maybe a doctor's not a best.
I've got a friend who's got his apartment here.
Insurance agent.
Right next door to his apartment is his office. Right next door, so he comes up like he popped in and out.
Good.
That's David Fenstein.
So that's good. So then she's got no issues at all.
It's not such a problem because people are better to take their clothes when they're the doctors.
So when I went,
which could lead to this dance.
Rabbi said, when I came to visit, he popped in.
By the way, I'm not sure what is this. No, you could with a doctor?
No, I was telling what David's mother.
Okay, hold on. So that's the BS other, but it would seem that Rambam would disagree, right? Okay, what about the next one? Shapitcho patuach lishus rabbah. So this is what we're talking about. What does it mean, pesach basuach? What does it mean that the door is open? Ayin shuvas rabbeinu akiva eger. This is what they all quote. This is Rabbi Akiva eger. Ubechuvas agon beis meir. Shekas of the ikal emedak mizeh hapetach satum. Afilu eino na'ul. Vuhu poneh l'rishut harabim. O patuach l'chatzer. Vuhu ima b'yichud b'habayit. Havei yichud. V'chein ma'ashra v'kedushin. Says that if the door is closed but unlocked, that's considered yichud. Umad ita b'tshuvas harashba, the ein yichud achi habayis na'ul b'min al, the Rashba didn't say that. The Rashba said that it's yichud only when the door is locked. So the Rekiv Eger said about that, ta'ut sofer hu. He says that was a typo. Somebody made a typo. It should have just said closed, not locked. Achein reidu b'tshuvas haradbaz shehetik l'shana rashba hanav v'lokatz of shetos over. But the Radbaz apparently disagreed. Rav David ben Zimra disagreed with Rabbi Akiva Eger because he quoted the Rashba as it was, meaning that it only had to be closed and not. It only had to be. Sorry, had to be locked to be a problem. Exactly, mm-hmm. It was good enough for it to be unlocked for it to solve the problem of yichud. Sham erich lachok al chacham echad shehivi kamarayot the yichud abi afilu ein petach klal lachada shemidyachtim shama. For who's al dacharayotav mishum dahav vaday de belayla baafila havi yichud afilu below petach. V'chein bayom imu tachad margalot hamita hu makom she'en adam roeh otam. If they're hiding under a bed, there's probably yichud. V'chein ma shehizkiru chazal. Churva or a ruin. He's here expanding it. We tend to think that yichud means you're in a place. We tend to think secluded means closed, right? But it doesn't always mean closed. You could be alone in a forest, right?
Yeah.
If you're alone in a forest, in a dark forest where there's no one around, that's yichud. If you're in an abandoned warehouse, you could have all the doors open and all the windows open. That's yichud. Nobody's coming in. Nobody's looking. What?
Office tower.
Yeah, huge office tower. It can keep all the doors open. I mean, there is the guard, right? Right. But yeah, in theory, it's wide open.
We had this the last two left at the end of the day.
We were joking before, but cameras have made a big difference to this.
Oh, sure.
Cameras and phones. Phones are much easier to tell where people are.
No, but a camera, you could connect to your computer.
The phone's after the fact. The camera, literally, I mean, the fact that someone puts a camera here or whatever, they can watch it any time of the day, you can look on.
I'm saying the opposite. If your husband went to work and you didn't have a phone, you'd know where he is, when he's coming home, whatever. If you've got a phone, you've just spoken to him and he says, yeah, I'm in the office, I'll be home in an hour and a half, then
you know where he is. That's true.
Could be lying,
you could always GPS his phone. You could check his phone.
It's different to
you just don't know where he is. You walk in
and you can watch every minute of the
but it seems like the Chazam Sofer is going against this.
Well, the Chazam Sofer didn't say anything yet. He didn't say anything yet. No, but you're talking about Rabbi Akiva Eger?
Yeah, the Chazam Sofer, which we read before, against Rabbi Akiva Eger, says that.
That was the Rabbi Baz, you mean? Rabbi Baz who said. What do you say there?
Above.
Chazanish. A couple hundred years. because we said the Chazanish felt that it was just about, the psychological reality. And the fact that anybody
closed,
can come in.
If as long as there's a door, if the door's closed, people can come in, it's fine.
He sounds like the Red Buzz, that as long as there's a door and people could come in, theoretically, even if it's unlikely that they will, it's still going to be okay. Okay. The last one over there, the second to last one, Tet, Patroch Rishut Rabim, Ayin Be'eretev, B'Shem HaKesek Dol, Dedakv Be'yom, oh, it's only okay during the day. Petach Patroch is only okay during the day, he says. U'b'chazi Sha'a Me'alayla, in the first half hour, I guess, of the night. Vayin B'Sefer, not sure what that is, Shekatsu Azeh, U'dvarim, oh, Birke Yosef, that's the Chidah. Sefer Birke Yosef, Azeva Advarim Shaltam Hem Dikshein Ober Veshav Mai Mahani Petach Patuch. In other words, here the poskim are saying that you have to use your seichel.
But in those days when no one was walking past.
But it's true as well nowadays. You have to use your seichel. Just because the door is open doesn't mean that it's okay. Just because there is a door open doesn't mean that people are going to come in. The Chazanish, notwithstanding, is just speaking common sense wise. Just because there's a door there doesn't mean that it's going to be okay at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. 3 o'clock in the morning, on in a little corner of Ranana, nobody's walking by, right? If you're in Bnei Brak, it's a different story. But in a place where there's nobody ever there, then keeping the door open doesn't really help you. In other words, it's not like a technical het there. Like, okay, keep the door open, you're good. Tosus b'Shabbos, the Palti ben Laish, but Petach Patuach Rishut Rabim Haya in Michal. Who is Palti ben Laish? Paltiel. It's Gemara in, I believe, Brachos. If I remember correctly. Paltiel was problematically married to Michal. How could he? Why do I say he was problematically married to Michal?
Because it was supposed to be for David.
Because Michal was really married to David, because David was promised Michal. From killing Goliath.
But he never.
Well, Shaul was so angry that he didn't want to let it, so he kind of like created another marriage with Palti ben Laish, and the Gemara says Palti ben Laish was such a tzaddik that he put a knife in between the beds, and so the question could be, what about Yichud? So he says that they used to keep a door open. So the question though is, but I'm sure it was, what happened, they were sleeping late at night. It must be that there was they had a party every single night. They had a party every single night, and they had to, and it wasn't a problem.
But if you order food online, and the guy is coming to bring your food to you from the supermarket, and you're alone in the house, can he come in?
If you're a man?
No, if you're a woman.
If you're a woman, no. He can come in. He can come in. He drops off and leave. As long as you don't reach the Shir Yichud, which is about, I think I said 8 minutes last time. It's really about 3 minutes. 8 minutes is the amount that we wait for Yichud because it's like the longest. For Yichud at a wedding because it's like, we're trying to be as to get as much as possible, but 3 minutes we want to take the minimum shear for actual yichud. So 3 minutes is really the place where that comes up is for an elevator ride. All the poskim wonder about an elevator ride, whether that's considered yichud. So most of the poskim say no, because no elevator ride is ever really 3 minutes long. And 3 minutes is about the time it takes.
It's a great shidduch story, but I'm not going to tell you.
Which
it turns up to. The place where they're set to meet or whatever else, and the lift comes, the elevator comes.
And he won't get out of there.
And no, she says to him, you wait for the next one. I'm going into the elevator. I'm not going in.
So he doesn't even go. He doesn't go. I'll tell you another one. Did you ever hear the one about the...
I know someone who
had. Did you ever hear the one about the ski lift? There was a couple on a date, and they got stuck on the ski lift. And the place closed. And it was the night. So I think it was the guy, and he was high up.
He jumped,
broke his leg. It was a story in the news a few years ago.
To go and get help, and he jumped, or
he couldn't. There was, I guess they didn't have a cell phone. They didn't have a cell phone. Everything he did.
It wasn't because of Yichud that he jumped.
It was because of Yichud that he jumped.
You couldn't jump to save him. No, get him out.
He jumped. He didn't think he would break his leg, but he jumped.
Oh, he didn't think he could stand.
Why did he push him? Your wife is right there.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
There was a story. It was in the news. It was the news probably a decade ago.
What, on a ski lift is long enough?
They were alone. They were literally alone. It was the place had closed down.
That's Miley's mixed dancing.
What? What were they going to do? Okay. Doesn't matter. So.
But today to open a door. Today, if the door stays open, even if you're in the penthouse in the middle of the night, and
right.
someone comes by
right.
for more than 3 minutes, an electrician, okay, who's going to help you out. Today, if you leave the door open, even though there's no chance of anyone coming by, it's still a solution, right?
That's what you do today. That's what you do today, because there is a chance that somebody will come by. It's a chance somebody will come by, as long as you keep the door open, like, they'll walk
open.
By... Open, yeah. I don't think you can close the door. I don't think you can close the door in that situation. I don't think you can close.
No, but leaving the door open.
Not at 3 a.m. If you've got a problem with your electricity or whatever else, and they send around an emergency guy to come and fix it or whatever else at 3 a.m., you can't leave the door open. I mean, it won't make a difference leaving the door open.
I would say you should. I would say you should leave the door open, even though the Chazanish seems to say that they're supposed to say you can close the door.
No, because look at my say you.
What?
You
could. That could work. That would definitely work.
But let's say it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You're not answering your phone. What happens? There's no electricity. So today, that's what I
yeah,
know
you
that you're leaving the door open.
Sure.
Your house, for instance. You leave the door open, no one's going to.
If you look, if you really want to be machbit about it, you can knock on a neighbor's door. You can knock on a neighbor's door or something.
Well,
like
three
that.
In the morning.
You weren't here last week. I told them what I did. I told them what I did. When I was in YU, so. I was already working, and one day I had to work from home, but I had the babysitter. We had the babysitter coming over because I was working. I didn't want to watch the babysitter.
Nanny.
The babysitter coming over. Nanny, I guess. And I had an issue where I can't be there with her. My wife is at work. Is at school. So I went to the Ace Magician. I asked one of my friends. He said, you know, can you stop by at some point today? Stop by at some point today. That's good enough because that's. I'll leave the door unlocked. You could just come in. And he didn't come. And I spoke to him the next day. I said, you know, you didn't come by. He's like, I know, I was talking to my chavrusa, and we decided that I didn't need to come. Because as long as he thought I was going to come, then it's okay. He's like, but tomorrow I'll come. it didn't actually come up because...
You know what happened to me? I was in
the
movie house in America. I was the only one in the movie house. And somebody else. The movie finished. I fell asleep. But my Israeli phone and my medical phone went. Nobody else asked to come in. I thought I couldn't get out, and eventually I got out.
No question.
All right.
That was a problem.
Me and another man.
You need one other person in the
movie.
I want to wrap up the halacha section. So first look at the Igros Rosh on the bottom. It says Menachem Mash Amar Lecha Bincha Rav Mordechai Shlita Bishmi. Interesting, right? Sheyichur im ima ubita vim ima uvbat bita uvbat bena pashut shleika iser. In other words, for you to have yichud with a mother and her daughter, or granddaughter, is not a problem of yichud. Why? Because they're shamrot echad l'sheni. It's like just like for you to have yichud with two women, and one of them's husband is in town, it's okay to have yichud with the two of them. So here too, because you know that they're gonna. What? It's okay for you to. So it's okay for you to be alone with them. It's okay for you to be alone with them. Just like being with a mother and her daughter in the same house is okay. But two sisters is not okay. Interesting. That's Rav Moshe Paskind. The last thing was just the Shulchan Aruch a little more. Lo titacher isha achat afilu im anashim harbe ad shtei ishto shel achad mehem sham v'chein lo titacher isha achat afilu im anashim harbe. It's in general what we said. V'yesh lomer de isha achat mitchiachadet im shnei anashim kshirim im hu ba'ir. That's what we said as well. V'stam anashim kshirim hem. Regular people are kshirim. We saw that the Rambam disagreed with that. The Rambam basically would say we're all pritzim. And therefore, because he read the Gemara literally. The Gemara actually has a line where Rav says that he considers himself a parut. So we definitely, but we decided that it's only Midas Chasidus, that's the Ramah Paskins. Avalim en pritzim afilo im yud asur. What does pritzim mean? Don't know. You need three because one of them will go to the bathroom. This is not the way that we paskin, but it says that one man with many women is only a problem for a man who kind of, his business is with women, so he's very used to being around the women, and nobody will be suspicious that he's around with the women. Like don't, but a regular person is okay. We don't pass him this way.
If it's a psychiatrist.
No, that's not Iskoyim Anashim. This is more like he runs a maternity store.
In general,
or
with these
like
women,
that.
You say with those women, is he with those women? Employees or colleagues or whatever.
Yeah, Anashim. Probably does mean with those women. This is saying in any situation, he's saying that the only person that's a problem for is a person who works with women. But anybody else is okay. There's no problem with
it. But
that's not.
No,
that's the phrase. That's the phrase. If the.
The person is not Jewish?
No, it's no. If the man is not Jewish for a woman, a Jewish woman with a non-Jewish man, no, it's not okay. Here, just give these out. I might as well hand this out as well.
No South African man is ever not
Jewish. No, sure.
Why? Because of the maid.
Yeah. And there's hard rules of not
being no one's.
But you have cameras,
no
right?
Lots
of cameras. Yes, that's a problem.
No, if you have a woman and a daughter, it's okay. So if the mate brings along a daughter as well, then you're fine.
That's true.
It
didn't come out. All right, well, we're not actually on the Gemara yet, so you can look at the... look at the sheet. I don't have it. What? Yeah, hold off on that. So first, take a look at the Ritva. This is. I gave two. One a source sheet and one Gemara.
I've got
the
source
sheet.
You have this.
It's a Ritva. We're just going to read the Ritva. Okay. So this is the Ritva. This is the last Ritva in Masachet Kedushin. And he says as follows, kind of wrapping up the whole Tznius Sugya that we just we did most of. Hakol lefi da'at shamayim. V'chein elchata da'akol kefi masha adam makir ba'atzma. He's quoting a Gemara that we haven't yet seen yet, but that's okay. We'll get there. V'chein elchata da'akol kefi masha adam makir ba'atzma. You should figure out what kind of person you are. If you need a harchaka, if you need to watch yourself, you should. If you're the kind of person that gets turned on by something, you need to not do it. This is the kind of thing in the Big Day Tzivonim. What that is that a woman's undergarments, not while it's on her body. You see it in the store. So some people, that immediately arouses them. So if you're that kind of person, you can't even look. But if you're not that kind of person, so this is kind of a call to understand yourself and your sviva, and your environment, and the kind of environment you're living in. If it doesn't do anything for you, then mutar lo listakel udaber im ha'erva. Erva here just means a woman that you're not allowed to be with. Ulishol b'shalom eshet ish. And you look at this, and this is amazing. He says it's mutar. It's mutar lishol b'shalom eshet ish. This is, you read the Gemara and you look in the Shulchan Aruch and you have to ask yourself, how am I allowed to talk to my friend's wife? Because it says you're not. This Ritva is the answer. The Ritva says there are some things that are objective, and this is subjective. It's not, if it doesn't arouse anything with you, then it's okay. It could lead to hugging outside shul. We don't even want to. Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely right. But then again, I want to be able to walk into my brother's house and say, "Hi, Nav, how are you?" To my brother's wife. So this Ritva is the source for that. Next time my brother says to me, "Nu, what are you talking to my wife?" I can say it's the Ritva at the end of Kedushin. So Diyativ Ashari Tzvila, which is a Gemara in Bava Metzia and also in Brachos, I believe, talks about how Rav Yochanan used to sit at the gate of the mikveh as the women were walking out. Why did he do that?
He looked very much like Brad
Pitt.
Yeah,
because, he didn't look like Brad Pitt, actually. He looked more like... actor from The Big Lebowski, let's say. I don't know. What was that movie?
Dan. Charlton Heston.
No, he was obese, Rav Yochanan. Okay. He was a Baal Basar. That's what the Gemara says about him.
The whole business was Reish Lakish.
What do you know about the ancient world? What was
that
beauty?
What was beauty
in the ancient world?
Henry
girth.
Henry VIII.
Rabbi Yochanan was so overweight, it says, that we are supposed to sit up to say Kriyat Shema in the bed, right? But he sat on his side. He lay on his side, and that was good enough because he was a Baal Basar, the Gemara says. So he used to sit outside the Shari Tefila, below Chayei Shei Tzahara, and the Gemara says the reason why he used to do that was that the women should look at him on the way out, and the first thing they should see was something beautiful, so that Kabbalistically that will be that the fetus will be beautiful when they eventually conceive.
I think I need something stronger.
That's what the Gemara says. They asked him, what are you doing? So and they asked him, why are you worried about the Yetzirah? He says, because it doesn't do anything for me. Rabbi Ami denafki le'amhata de be'kesar. Amad be'kesar. I actually don't know what that was.
Yeah, big eyebrows. Mr. C. Who's that?
I don't know. I don't remember this one. Nafki le'amhata de be'kesar.
I remember that.
Yeah, he had big fleffy eyebrows. Eyebrows,
no,
eyebrows.
They
couldn't see.
And look at Rav Ada Bar Ava. This is famous. Rav Ada Bar Ava. You can think of this every time you go to a wedding. Rav Ada Bar Ava. Shamra Bixubas. The Nakit Kala Katfe. Verakid Baf. Velo Chayish. Rav Ada Bar Ava used to dance with the Kala on his shoulders, and it wasn't his daughter. He used to dance with the Kala on his shoulders, and he wasn't related to her. And the Gemara asks, how can he do that? Because he said she's like, it's like a piece of wood on my back. It doesn't affect me at all. That's what he said.
I saw that at a Hasidic wedding.
Yeah.
Isn't that fucking nice?
Maybe it was a Skype call with him on his back.
The first time I saw a mitzvah tanz at a Hasidic wedding.
Yeah.
Blown away. They take this gartel, the longest gartel in the world.
They do it in different rooms now. They do it like the guy's same room.
But he doesn't think he's touching her. What? Isn't it? He doesn't think he's touching her.
He absolutely is touching her.
How can he do that?
Yeah. Because it's not their chiba.
Yeah. Hmm?
Not their chiba. That's the idea.
He's like a piece of wood.
Not the Achiba. Elishain Rai says, says, but these kinds of things, you can't be Mekel unless you're really, really a big Chasid, a big saintly person that you know yourself. As we're going to see, not all the Tanaim were so strong that they could handle this. We're going to see this.
That one of the issues was David HaMelech, that he said he could resist temptation and then
yeah, the Gemara Sanhedrin says that both of them.
How gadol do you have to be?
Yeah, so hold on. So we'll see in the Gemara, we'll make lots of comments about that. You should learn Torah, and it will protect you. By the way, what did I want to tell you about? The mikvah one? Is it the mikvah one that I wanted to say? What did I want to say? The Rabbi Yochanan? Something came into my head, and I wanted to tell you, and now I can't remember what it was. Oh, yeah, no, just an old joke that my friends and I used to have. Somebody told us a story. I probably told this to you already. But my best friend and I, we were sitting once, and somebody told us a story about some Hasidic Rebbe that he used to stare at the scantily clad women on the street as he walked by. And it was okay, because he was very holy. So it was okay. So I used to joke with my friend. We responded, we're like, you know, they say it was Moshe Feinstein. He used to eat chametz on Pesach. It was okay. Because he was so kadosh. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach used to murder people with his bare hands, and nothing went wrong, and it was fine, his soul was fine, because everything, you know, he's just joking. But I guess maybe they're just quoting the Ritva, and maybe it was okay. I don't know.
He can dance with her on the shoulders, but he can't be allowed within the room for more than 8 minutes.
Correct. That's absolutely correct, because it's minadin. All the things that Ritva is mentioning are things that are subjective.
Yeah.
Derechiba would be subjective. Yeah. For him and her, it's not in the for them to have yichud would be a problem, because there's an objective problem there.
Why is it an objective problem?
Yichud is an objective din. It says you cannot be alone with a woman.
Right. Even if it does nothing for you.
It's a rule. Take it. It's all.
No, but there's a good point. There's no din that says you can't dance with a woman on your shoulders.
Right. The touching, as Meir said, he's touching her. But there are rules about the touching. As long as it's not derechiba, it's okay. So here, it wasn't derechiba. That's why it's okay.
There's no such qualification.
It has to be that's the answer. There are things that are this is what I was going to tell you before. Now I remember. The Aruch HaShulchan, right? The controversial topic. The Aruch HaShulchan, in the Aruch HaShulchan, he talks about anytime you learn the sugya of Sar B'Isha Ereva, of women covering their hair, you always have to read the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan lived in a time where he describes himself that we've been yelling about it for years, and nobody's listening to us, the women don't listen. They don't want to cover their hair. So he said, so how do we daven in shul? No, he didn't actually say this. He didn't say this. Rav Moshe Feinstein uses the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't know many places where the Moshe Feinstein quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, uses the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan says, how can we even look at the women? How can we even look at the women? Their hair is uncovered. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, there's two dinim in the hair covering. One is that they have to cover their hair, and the second is that the hair is erva, that it's like nakedness. So the fact that they have to cover their hair is its own din, and the fact that you're not allowed to look at their hair is a separate thing. That's subjective. That's, this ritva counts for that. If it doesn't do anything for you, and the moment that everybody's walking around with their hair uncovered means that it's not going to do anything for you, so it's not a problem to look, but she still has to cover it. There's the two
That's
separate
their obligation,
things.
Right?
Exactly.
It is your obligation.
Exactly. There's two separate things. So Rav Moshe says that explains how we're allowed to daven in shul, because the mechitza only goes up to the shoulder, and the women are walking into the shul with their hair uncovered, and you're saying Shema. And that the very, 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 very basic din of Sar B'Yisha'erva with regards to a man is that you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema in front of women's or married women's uncovered hair. So how are you allowed to do that? So Rav Moshe says, because of the Aruch HaShulchan's point that it doesn't do anything for men anymore, so that's not going to be a problem. But there are other parts of the woman's body that they do something, or they're objectively a problem. The hair is not.
It becomes a slippery slope.
But the slope stops somewhere.
Where? There's no
the objective
where,
places.
Shok
Miisha Erva. And
man dancing with his wife be subjective?
What?
If a man wants to dance with his wife, then just dancing.
What's wrong with a man dancing with his wife?
In public.
What's wrong with a man dancing with his wife in public? In theory.
So
no, I'm saying. What isser is happening when a man dances with his wife in public? There's no isser happening. It's public policy. It's news. That's definitely very subjective. I think. Oh my gosh, was that our rabbi? I think it was the rabbi of my shul from years ago, Rabbi Poland. I think I don't know where I heard this story from. I don't remember, but I think maybe my mother said it, where the rabbi said. There's no problem with a man dancing with his wife as long as it's the right time and the right place. And then I think at somebody's wedding they asked the rabbi if he would like to dance with his wife. He says, this is not the right time. I really think that was the old rabbi of our shul, I think. So yeah, I mean, there's no objective problem with it. Of course there isn't. But there's social mores. These things wax and wane, right? They wax and wane in terms of what's okay according to society and what's not okay according to society. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva about that. It's a very, very often used tshuva. Rav Shechter gave me this as an answer when I asked him one question. I have a sefer in my house. What's it called? Door or something. It is an amazing, tiny, tiny little sefer. I don't remember where I found it. I think it's from Isaiah's house. There's no author. The author's name is not in there. It's written by somebody who clearly came from Europe, and it's about all the terrible things that happened in America. And this is written probably 40, 50 years ago, but all the things that when he came to America, he couldn't believe the way that people act. Men go out to restaurants with their wives, and they have joint meals with other families. It's a mind-blowing. It's amazing. I love looking at it every once in a while. But then sometimes I look at it, and I'm like, maybe he's right. You know, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch, look at some of the things that say straight up not to do, and we do all the time. Shoal b'shloma isha. Nobody's machben on that. There's a sefer by Rav Chaim Kanievsky right now, who's alive right now. He has a sefer where he says you're not allowed to do that anymore. So I went to Rav Shechter. I said, well, how do we do this? And I don't plan on changing, but how do I justify this? So he quoted Rav Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva about walking behind a woman to get on a bus. Yeah. This is the truth. Walking behind a woman to get on a bus. So he said, back in the day, there's a Gemara about walking behind a woman. You're not allowed to. He says, well, we're not makbid on that. You walk behind. You can't not walk behind the woman. So he says, first of all, you can't not. First of all, you can't not. Seder. Seder. But forget about going on a bus. We're on the street. You can't not. You can't not. And he says, second of all, look, that was then. It was a different reality. It was kind of, first of all, probably even outside the Jewish world, that was considered standard.
Covering the hair was also.
Yeah, we saw Braveheart. They're all covering their hair. And he says, and also it was more realistic, and it was not so as in your face. Nowadays, it's impossible, and it doesn't really move you generally when you do these things. So these things wax and wane. That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says.
An amazing story around the history in London in the early 60s. Where dancing tore the community apart.
It's not dancing between, like, unmarried people dancing?
No.
But they're all dancing, like, together.
Yeah.
So then...
Well,
in America, it was also huge.
Well, it used to be.
Because of a fundraising event.
Right. When you asked me that question, I thought you meant, like, a man and a woman alone dancing.
No, I understand that.
If you mean, like, swing dancing with all the women, so I can understand why there's...
No, not even that. Men dancing with their wives, only their wives, but with other men dancing with their wives... Next
so there, I can understand where there's a serious issue there because.
Is it? What? It doesn't seem to be anymore. Yeah,
it doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore.
What doesn't happen anymore?
I mean,
where?
Depends on
in
the
London, system. In Orthodox shows.
In a shul, it doesn't happen.
Shul.
In a shul, it doesn't
happen.
It used to happen in a shul hall. Yes, but usually after the rabbi leaves and everybody knows that there's something taboo. No, look, I can tell you from my own family members who've gotten married, and there's a certain point in the wedding where it starts to happen, which means that people acknowledge that this is not something that they're doing.
But
it is definitely subjective. It's definitely subjective.
Nothing other than having
not very well kept secret, but theoretically, at a when you're having dancing, right? You don't, and we know this. You don't necessarily need a mechitza in between the dancing. It's a good idea. It's a really good idea. It makes a lot of sense. But you don't theoretically need a mechita there.
That's a different story. That's a men dancing together. Rabbi, about that. Because this is everyone dancing together.
When he asked him about it, he said that Aaron told him he hadn't had one.
He what?
He didn't have one.
Didn't. Yeah. They used to have mixed seating as well at weddings. Everybody used to have mixed seating at weddings.
That's why the book was so shocked.
What?
The author of your book was so shocked when you got to America.
He was so shocked, yeah. He was shocked.
But my issue is in these dances, there was no one checking that everyone dancing was husband and wife. That's why people turned into an issue.
The rabbis used to dance with their wives at these dinners. Shuls had dinners and balls.
Right,
the rabbi and the wife.
But it was fine at the beginning because it only would have been a husband and wife. Once people started not doing husband and wife, then it became an issue.
Hold on. Just bring it back together. I did give you some, if you're interested. This is from an article by Rav Chaim Jachter. He's very good. He's a posek in New Jersey. He's very, very good summarizing at the halachas. I wanted to kind of skip the bulk of it, just jump all the way to the end, because Mike, this is something you brought up last time, and I think this is totally, you corrected yourself. The Rama cites an opinion that an engaged couple should not sleep in the same house, even if the parents of either the chatan or the kala are sleeping in the same house. Right, remember you said last time, maybe a chas and a kala could have yichud. No, the exact opposite. If anybody should not have yichud, engaged couple. Rav Yosef, though Salvejik, it's the Rav, was particularly scrupulous about this halacha. Rav Shechter relates that when a young man was engaged to a young lady in Boston and would come to visit his kala's family for Shabbat, the Rav would emphasize to the young man the importance of his not sleeping in his future in-law's home. The fact is, actually, my parents' my house in Brooklyn on the block is the chassan house. Whenever a girl is engaged, the chassan sleeps in the basement of my house. And now my parents are making aliyah. And the first thing I pointed out to them, I said, now there's not going to be any more shidduchim on the block because there's nowhere for the boys to sleep.
So now
or the girls.
They can establish it in Ramallah now.
Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. If anybody wants to stay in the private
room. Purely from the point of view of temptation, whatever.
Yeah, there's a special relationship between them, and there's also definitely an amara. Maris Ayin is the wrong word. It's inappropriate. It's not Maris Ayin, like we're worried that people are going to think of something, and it's not tsnius in the sense of like that we're worried something. Yeah, but it's inappropriate.
From the point of view, okay, this is all. The halacha says that he can't sleep in the same house.
The Rama cites that opinion.
No, there's not a lucky difference between an engaged couple and
The Gemara talks about this, right? What is the truth is, this is Dina de Gemara. What happens if a couple get married and then get married
okay.
with chuppah, but she's an avel, and he or she becomes an avel, and they aren't able to consummate the marriage. What happens? What does the Gemara Ksuba say?
What's
going
to be
they have to sleep in separate homes.
They have to sleep in separate, or they have to have. Yeah, they have to sleep in separate. Who yashen bein ha'anashim, v'hi yashena bein ha'anashim.
What's the thing about being an avel? What does an avel stop you from consummating marriage?
They can't. That's one of the Isurim when you're in avels.
Okay.
And shiva.
Yeah.
Doing shiva.
Doing shiva, yeah. And an onen. Yeah.
Just
coming back to this, the one week before they get engaged, they wouldn't see if there's a problem.
Why?
You know what I'm saying? They're saying on an engaged couple. Assuming,
there's no halachic difference between an engaged couple and an engaged
couple. 1 week before they engaged.
Yes, 100%.
But it's just because they're friends, not because they're engaged. It's not like significant getting engaged.
Different.
They're in a relationship.
Yeah, each other. That's what it is. It's not.
And it's not engaged.
No, I think they're just friends. If they're just friends, it's not the same.
No, I'm saying if they're boyfriend and girlfriend, or they get engaged, nothing changes.
No, if they're boyfriend and girlfriend, same thing. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't necessarily. You're saying the 1500s? No, not necessarily. It's not true.
You know, your mate from university or whatever else wants to come and enjoy a Shabbos with you or whatever else. That's not the same.
I don't think engaged is Dafka here. I think there would be no reason that they would be sleeping in the same house until they're engaged. I think that's why. Which is still true, meaning in a regular, let's say, from modern Orthodox, courtship, they're usually not sleeping in the same place until they're engaged. Usually doesn't.
I've got a friend who's who remarried, second marriage. They both had teenage kids. It was a real story. They both had teenage kids. There was no relationship between these kids. And his son ended up marrying her daughter.
Wow.
Anyway, so he said his son was the only from kid he knew who lived with his future wife.
Wow.
What age does this all start?
Which? Oh, for the
Yichud. Thanks to
Yichud. It's a great question. It
wouldn't have met otherwise.
It fluctuates. I would say, it's supposed to, look, the bottom is 3, right? Real Haredim will say 3. Because of all of these halachot, like Negiya and all that stuff, they start at 3. Most people in our community won't do that. I have a psak from one of my Rebbeim that it's around 9. For girls, it's supposed to be when you start to notice that they're a girl, kind of like when they start to become
really?
I don't know what the word is, mature. I think puberty
aware.
Is kind of like, but it's a little bit late.
Aware.
Maybe
aware.
So what happens
if
it's really hard? It's a good question. It's an issue.
It's an issue.
But if you have more than one kid, then it's not an issue anymore.
More than
it depends what age they are. Because a kid who's below the age of Yichud actually can be a Shomer. So if you have like a 6-year-old boy, let's say, right? So you're good.
Because he's the best Shomer in town,
Yichud, girls. And he takes care of everybody in the house.
According to what we said, it's more than 2 girls. If you had 2 girls, it wouldn't be alright.
It depends on how old they are. If you have a 6-year-old girl, let's say, for instance, it's good.
12, whatever you want.
So if you have you have 2, 13,
12-year-olds.
They don't need babysitters, right? They don't need babysitters. So usually around the time when you need to get a babysitter, that's when
If they ask for a babysitter, then it's a problem.
I was thinking about girl babysitters.
Or maybe it's a niche. Although we get boys sometimes.
With a boy, it's not.
Sometimes you get boys. We're not Makbid, but sometimes we get boys. It depends, I think.
We don't get boys. Girls with boys.
Depends where you live. Depends where you live. Okay, so that's that. Now, I wanted to go a little bit further in the Gemara for preparing for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. What? Awesome. Okay. What, for marriage, you mean?
Yeah, Armenian.
Oh, okay, fine. All right. Take a look in the Gemara from the sheet from last week. We're still on the sheet from last week. So if you have the good sheet, you have the good sheet. Pei Aleph Amud Bet. Wait, no, is that right? No. Wait, is that right? Pei Aleph Amud Aleph.
Okay.
And we are...
Aleph on the oath.
Do that first. By Hashem of Kana Achi V'Tanam in the name of God and Av the Chumra. Okay. Amar Avin. That's where we are. So third wide line. In the middle, it says Amar Avin. You see where it says that?
Yeah.
Yeah? Everybody? Amar Avin. Sakva deshata rigla. Sakva deshata rigla. Hanach shvuyata da'ata. Sorry, actually, that's it. Sakva deshata rigla. The worst part of the year is. It's rigla? The regalim. Look at Rashi. It's on the right side. Rashi. It says sakva deshata rigla right at the beginning of the line. Rashi says, Bi'ua. The worst days of the year for Yichud and for Aveira are the holidays. Because they come to Shul, to hear the Drasha. And then they hang out outside. That's the worst time. And if you look, by the way, at Tosos on the left side, Sakva deshata rigla perush riua shal yomot hashana deyichud avera klamar yomot haregel kutzot anashim anashim lishmo adrasha menotim ayin ze al ze v'yishom lekach nagul itanot l'achar pesach l'achar sukkot. What's he talking about? What's he talking about? Which fast? That's Bahab. This is the source for Bahab. This Tosos right here. Bahab. Behe, the Monday, Thursday, Monday after Pesach and Sukkot, after the last days of Pesach and Sukkot, there are fasts that nowadays they only keep in yeshiva. Nobody else does it, but people do it. And in Ramat Beit Shemesh they do it. From here. Because they would hang out on Pesach and Sukkot because people get together. So the reality was there was a social scene. Not only Yichud, but yes, Yichud. Social scene. Inappropriate behavior. That may be the sanitized version. Yeah.
That is based on what happened at
social. Yeah.
General liberty of
home. They were even providing kiddush.
Yeah.
Maybe it was the two.
Okay. So Hanach Shvuyata Da'atai Lenardo. Okay. Here's the famous story. You guys will know it the moment we hit a certain line. There were captive women that were saved and were brought to Narda. Da'atai Lenardo. These captive women were brought to Narda after they were saved. Askinu Lebeva Amram, Chasida. They brought them, these women, to the house of Rav Amram Chasida. Ashkulu Darga Mikamaihu. They put them in the attic, and then they removed the ladder so that nobody could go out there. Bahadi de kachalfa chadiminahu nafal nehura biyipuma. As Rav Amram Chasida was walking by, at a certain point, as you could see kind of into the crevice, one of them, this Gemara's language is, she revealed her elbow. In other words, I guess she didn't know anybody was looking, and then just a small part of her was revealed. Not even anything that enticing. Shakli Rav Amram Ladarga Delo Havi Yachlin Beasara Lamidle Dalya Lechudei. He grabbed the ladder, which it took 10 people to move. And he grabbed it by himself and he brought it over to the attic and he started to go up. Salik Vazil Ki At Mata Lapalga Darga. When he got to the middle of the ladder, Ifshech, he despaired. Rama Kala Nur Be Amram. He yelled out, there's a fire in the house of Amram. He yelled that out. Aturabanan Amrule Kasiftinan. They came, they brought the fire brigade, they brought the water, and there was nothing there. And they expected, and they saw where he was, what he was doing, and they said, "You have embarrassed us, Rav Amram. You've embarrassed us." Amrulu mutov tichsifu be Amram ba'al mahadein, velo tichsifu mine la'al madate. It's better that I should be embarrassed. Well, he says it's better that you should be embarrassed. Every time I read this, I always think it means I should be embarrassed. But Rashi, I believe, says, actually, does he say it? Or it's just that the Gemara says it. Yeah, the Gemara says it. The Gemara says that you should not be embarrassed. You should be embarrassed by Amram in this world and not in the next world. So that's what he says. And then the Gemara concludes the story, Da'ati Ashba'ai. The Amadati, sorry, Ashba'ai dinafak minei, nafak minei, ki amuda dinura. He, what does the word Ashba'ai mean here? He swore, he. He adjured, okay. He caused, I don't know what he did, but he caused the Yitzhahara, for Arayos obviously, to come out of him, and it came out like a pillar of fire. represented by a pillar of fire. And what did he do? Amalei chazi da'at nura va'ana bisra va'ana adif nabinach. He said, I'm meat, I'm made out of flesh, and you're made out of fire, but I'm better than you. I beat you. So the Mefarshim wonder what's going on over here, and they say a few things. The Maharsha says that, Ben Yoyada says that this happened on purpose. It was a way for Hashem to show everybody, for Abraham to show everybody that they could overcome the Yetzer Hara. But it's striking that, and I'll tell you what, I sent, Jonathan Rosenblum was here a few months ago, right, to talk about Gedolim books and everything. So I actually sent him an email today, which I had meant to send him a long time ago, but it was inspired by this. I said, you know, they could never print a book now with a story like this. Yeah. But we're about to read this one, and by the way, the next few stories are just like this. About, you know, and by the way, the people who say that you look through the Gemara and it glorifies rabbis and it empowers rabbis and gives them all the power. Why would they put a story like this in here? And the next two stories. It's not a very flattering story for Avraham. It's nice that it ends well. The others don't end well. And it's nice that it ends well, but still, I mean, it
doesn't reflect well on him.
No,
ultimately.
The ending is good, but
well, it would have been better if he'd simply overcome Yitzhak to begin with.
What?
They would have been able to put out the beginning of Esther to their
own. You're right.
What a nice girl from Town Hall.
Yeah, so that's the Ben Yoyada. And of course, the Yetzer Hara is described as fire. It's not the only place it's described as fire. Okay, the next story, Rabbi Meir. This is wild. Rabbi Meir, hava mitlotzleitz ba'ovi avera. He used to, Rabbi Meir basically used to make fun of over avera. He used to make fun of sinners as though, like, you know, what, you guys are stupid, what are you doing? This is Rabbi Meir. Yom achad idmi le'satan ki itata. So one day the Yetzer Hara wanted to get to him, so it appeared to him as a woman, a beautiful woman, obviously, on the other side of a river, right? Betray Ivri Dinahara. She's on the other side of the river. Lo Ava Mivra, he had no way to get across the river, but that didn't stop him. Nakat Mitzra v'Ka'avar, he grabbed a rope that was able to help him cross the river. He went to such lengths, literally. Kimata palga mitzra shavke. And then when he got to the middle of the river, this is also almost like a prank. When he got to the middle of the river, basically the satan, the Yetzer Hara, released him from, you know, basically he turned off the charm. He turned off the alluringness of it. So now Rav Meir is like in the middle of the river, I guess. Amar ilav de kamichase birakia izaru bar bimeir vitaraso shavisa le damech. If it wasn't for God protecting you, God said, cut it out, Satan. If it wasn't for that, I would have reduced you to nothing. Nobody would even be quoting you anymore. Nobody would care about you. You'd be a nothing because you would have gone through with it. It's Rav Meir. Basically saying that Rav Meir had to be saved in order to not let it happen.
Wait, who stopped the... So Hashem stopped the...
Hashem told the Satan to cut it out. He says, Shavite ledamach tartimai. That's what it is. You wouldn't be worth 2 ma'ot. You wouldn't be worth 2 cents. If Hashem didn't order me to stop.
It seems, this is what I was saying earlier, it seems very inconsistent with the line of thinking that says if something doesn't affect you, you're fine. What the Gemara is saying is the same with David. These people who think they are immune to this sort of temptation,
Even the ones who think they know, and this is what the Ritva was alluding to, by the way, he said that, the Ritva that we read, he said, even the Hasidim of the Tanayim, they also were susceptible to the Yetzer Hara. I guess there's a difference between, you know, telling if you're allured by hair or by clothing.
Elbow.
Or an elbow, yes. Yeah, you're right.
The fact that he didn't run out the house when it happened, he thought he's fine.
These stories are very, very striking, yeah. and they're like a little bit almost far-fetched. So I think Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldwicht has an essay, I couldn't find it online, but I remember my Rebbe telling me about it, where he says this is an example of what the Gemara in Sota says of Kol Gadol Michaver Yitzhar Gadol Himenu. Which is usually a mystical idea, the idea that, you know, if you're a greater person spiritually than somebody else, then your Yetzer Hara will be even greater. So there's two ways to read that. There's one way to read that, which is a mystical way, but not so mystical, but, you know, that if you have reached a certain level spiritually, so the Satan, in order to make life challenging for you, has to be given extra powers. The kochos of Tumah and Tara have to be equal in order for there to be a point in life. But I think on a practical, just psychological, normal level, you know, I can speak from my own experience, you know, for being in a year in yeshiva, I was out of New York. I spent most of my time in Beit Shemesh. I didn't even go that often to Yerushalayim because there was no reason to. I lived in a beautiful country club in Beit Shemesh, if you know what my yeshiva was like. So I was literally just in the Beit Medrash and talk on the phone with my friends, go to Yerushalayim once in a while. That was my life. And then I went back to New York, and I, you know, almost walk out of my house and a bus comes by with this just literally a naked woman just right there, just drives by, and I was jarring. I was like, I haven't seen that in a year. Like, I haven't seen anything like that. No experience.
Bus?
The bus.
The bus.
It was.
I never got to Jerusalem.
And there's everything. Everything just comes back in, and you realize that, you know, for somebody who's been kind of hermetically sealed off from something for so long, and has made an effort to do that, everything is much larger than life. Than after a few years, when you get back into it and it's kind of inured against it, it just doesn't mean anything to you anymore. So these people, perhaps, Rav Amram had not seen anything like that. He just was not used to it. That's just on a psychological level.
He didn't seem to tempt the Satan.
Rav Amram, no, but Rav Meir did, and Rabbi Kiva is going to. Rabbi Kiva is going to.
The fact that the Satan had to turn out, I mean, there weren't any women around. In order
he had to make up his own.
Yeah, he had to become a woman.
The Satan is going to come off very vindictive from these Gemaras, by the way. He's really, he was not happy with Rabbi Meir.
That's the whole point.
Yeah, he's not happy with Rabbi Meir. By the way, Meir, you were talking about the screw tape letters. These Gemaras are that.
Thing.
Yeah, the closest thing we have. So Rabbi Kiva, Ava Mitlotzes Bovi Avera. Rabbi Kiva was making fun of Ovi Avera. Yom Achad Idmi Le Satan Ki Itita Bereish Dikla. He appeared as a woman at the top of a palm tree. Nokte Le Dikla Vakasalik Vazil. He started to climb up. Kimata Le Palge De Dikla Shavke. When he got up halfway up the tree, the Satan let go of him. Amr Yilav the Mikhras of Rukiya Yizar Rabbi Kiva Tarasu Shavi Se Le Damach Tarti Mayai. Same thing. Plimo have a regular memar kol yom agirabein the Satan. Plimo used to say every day, an arrow in the eye of the Satan. In other words, you stink, Satan. You whatever. Yeah, a little bit of that, but more than that, kind of just insulting. He was disrespectful to the Satan. Chad male yom de kippuri on erev yom kippur. Have id mile ke anya. This was hard. He appeared to him. This is a long one. He appeared to him as a poor person. He was like an ani. Ata kara abava. I read it from the side. He called out for abava, which is alms for some tzedakah. Okay, he called out for some tzedakah, for some food. Apikul, it's Erev Yom Kippur. Apikul Erifta. So they brought out bread for him. Amar le yoma ki ha'idna kuli alma gavai vana barai. So the guy wasn't satisfied. This pseudo ani wasn't satisfied. He said, "What? Everybody's inside, and I have to stand outside." Aile krivu le rifta. They brought him inside and gave him some bread. Amar le yoma ki ha'idna kuli alma ataba. Va'ana lechudai. What? Everybody's sitting at that table, and I have to sit at this table. Atiu utvu ataka. They brought him to the table with everybody else. Havayativ mile navshe shichna v'kivayale. And then they noticed that his body was covered with boils and sores that was oozing. His posture was disgusting. He was just a disgusting individual. Va'ava ka'avid be mile demayis, and he was doing disgusting things. Amrle plimo said to him, Tiv Shapir, sit properly and stop doing disgusting things. Amrle havuli kasa, give me a cup of wine. Yavuli kasa, they gave him a cup. Ich mar shada be kichu, he coughed and he spit into the cup. Nachrube, and they began to scold him. Shaka umit, and he made himself appear as if he had died. Okay. Shamu dahavu kaamre, plimu katal gabra, plimu katal gabra. People were saying, plimu killed this guy. Arak v'tasha navshei bebayit. Bebeta Kisei, thinking that everybody was going to come into to his house to kill him, that the police were going to come in and do something to him. So he fled in the bathroom outside the city. Azil Batrei, then the Satan came and he followed him, Nafal Kamei, and he fell down in front of him. Kichazie Dahava Mitztayer, and the Satan saw that Plimo was so bothered by what he thought he had done, so then he revealed himself. Galilei Nafshe Amar Le, my time Amar Tahachi. Finally, the Satan revealed himself to Plimo, and he said to Plimo, why do you say these not nice things about me? What, you think I don't have feelings? If you prick me, do I not bleed? So the Satan was upset. He was offended. So Plimo said, what should I say? You're the answer. What should I say about you? You should say, may the merciful way God rebuke the Satan. So in other words, all the Satan wanted was a little bit of respect. But I think there's something here. There's something here where the metaphor, the story, I think, indicates that we need to give respect to the Yetzer Hara. For a few reasons. Number one, because if we don't, then he's going to do something to us. But also because he's there for a reason. And it's not wise or practical to just scoff at it. You have to take it seriously. And whether that's talking about Ovri Avera or it's talking about Avera itself, there's a little bit of Al Tamin Ba'atzmachad Yom Otcha, that you can't trust yourself. No, don't believe that you're going to be okay no matter what, just because you've been okay until now. And also realizing that it fills a role and that it's a good thing and that we should respect it. That's, I think, one of the messages that comes out from these stories.
The only one that actually beats the Satan, beats his Yetzer, is Rabbi Amram. And he's the only one who didn't tempt.
He is. The others lost.
And the others, yeah. The Satan had to give up before they, otherwise they would have, there's no implication that they would have beaten it.
Yeah. A couple of more stories and then we'll finish. Rav Chia Barashi have a ragil kol idon dehava nafla pei. Every time he would do tachnun, Rav Chia Hava Amar Rahman Yatzilenu Miyetzer Hara. So we don't say this, but he says, he would say every single time, may Hashem save me from the Yetzer Hara. So that's good. But apparently it wasn't good enough. Yom Echad Shmatinu Debeitu. It was good enough for the Satan, but it wasn't good enough for his wife. Yom Echad Shmatinu Debeitu. His wife overheard him. And she said to herself, Amra Michti Hakama Shani Deparish Lamina. You know, we haven't been together in many years. Why is he saying this? What exactly is he concerned with? We haven't been together. I don't know if it's because Rabbi Chia is old or if they've just got a haskan between them. But they haven't, what Yetzer Hara? I haven't seen a Yetzer Hara on him. What's he talking about? So Yom Echad Hamakagaris Beginte. So what did he do? What did she do? He was studying in the Gina. Kishta Nafsha. She dressed herself up. Chalfa, but she dressed herself. She Chalfa v'Tanya Kameh. She passed in front of him many times, but she's dressed as someone else. Amr La Man At. She didn't recognize her because she was dressed up as someone else. And he says, "Who are you?" Amr Ana Charuta Dehadre. My name is Charuta, and Charuta was apparently the name of a zona. And she said, "I just returned." He obviously doesn't know what Charuta looks like, so he thought it was Tva'a. He solicited her. She said, "Bring me that pomegranate on the top of the tree." Right, Rosh Hashanah. Bring me that pomegranate. Something to think about. Bring me the pomegranate. Kiata levete. Then when he came home, he went. He got the shavar azil ati lihali. He got the pomegranate. Kiata levete. Avakashagar debate tenura. When he came home, his wife was heating up the oven. He was so ashamed that he went and he sat in the oven because he was going to kill himself. Amrele, my hi, what are you doing? Amrele, hachi v'hachi havamase. He told her. Now that's probably the most amazing part of the story, right? He told her exactly what happened. Amrele, anahave, it was me. Lo ashkachba, didn't care. Adi yavale simani. So no, I should say he didn't believe her until she gave him simanim. Amar la ana miali sura itkavne. But then he said, nevertheless, I still wanted to do something wrong. Amar la kol yamav shalot tzadik hayamit ana achemet baotamita.
That's when pomegranate became a
simanim. Maybe that was one of the simanim. Yeah. Maybe that is the simanim she gave him. I wonder if that was the simanim that she gave him. It must be.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, must be. Because it just says Simane. But you're right. That must be the Simon that she gave him. That's like Yehuda and Tamar. Wow, I don't think anybody... I wonder if Rashi says that. Does Rashi say that? Rashi does not say that. Lamar doesn't say it. Does Arisco point it out? By the way, it's not clear whether they actually did something. Most of the Mefarshim think they did. That he didn't just, it didn't just stop with her, with the pomegranate. But it was okay because it was his wife. But he didn't think it was okay. And anyways, the anyways, the what happens is that he actually, he considers this a sin, and he, like Elazar ben Rudaya, eventually dies from his pain and from fasting from this. The Mefarshim point out that there is an idea that in halacha there is an idea that if you think that you did an avera, even if you actually didn't, but you intended to do it and you think you did, that there is tshuva to do for that. In fact, that's the next, the very next thing in the Gemara talks about a nazir. The very next thing in the Gemara talks about a woman who takes a neder to be a nazir and thinks and doesn't realize that her husband has annulled the neder, which he has allowed to do that day, and she drinks wine that very day, so she has to bring. She has to do tshuva. She has to do tshuva because at the time she thought that it was usher what she was doing. You know, for instance, if you eat a piece of meat that you thought was chazir and then it turns out it really was machbud, you have to do tshuva. You have to do tshuva for that. Whether you have to bring a korban is a different question, but you do have to do tshuva for that. Because actually, there's a story here. The Gemara says. The Gemara tells a story about Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva, he would cry when he heard about this because he says, if a person who eats, who intended to eat chazir and then really ate kosher food, he has to do tshuva. So surely somebody who intended to eat something that wasn't kosher and actually did eat something kosher definitely has to do tshuva. Seems obvious. Okay. There's more halachos of yichud, but I think we can stop there. And we can indeed stop there, but there's a lot of things to talk about in terms of the Yetzer Hara, and we should keep in mind to give the Yetzer Hara its due respect as we go into Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Yishar Koach, Shana Torah.